to the Rockman Show. It's time for Rockman to give his opinions, his views, and his thoughts on life and rock. So grab a beer, buckle in, and get ready to rock!
You got your boy Ragman. Listen to Kiss, or somebody doing a Kiss cover of I Was Made for Loving You, a dance version. Who would think, what's it, like 30, 40 years since that song came out, and now they're doing disco versions or dance versions for clubs or whatever you want to do. I don't know. All right, guys, I'm back in Houston. I'm back from my road trip. All went well. I came back in one piece. All my organs, no babies I'm aware of, and no wives to speak of. So all good. I made it back in one piece. So had a good trip, with the exception of my little scare with in Romania. But other than that, I'm back on track. All's good. Just wanted to do a quick intro. I've got a great, great interview coming up here shortly with one of my favorite guitar players out there today. Simone Mularoni from DGM. They got a brand new record coming out, and he's going to tell you a little bit about it. So stay tuned for that. But real quick, I just was out and about today, or actually yesterday, I was with some friends, kind of get back in the swing of things, you know, getting over the jet lag and all that. It takes a little bit of time. And met some good friends, my friends Dave and Lauren, at a brewery, and we're just sitting there drinking. You know, I'm telling them about my trip and stuff like that. And the song comes on, and I don't know if this happens to you, but it happens to me a lot, where I can be somewhere and this song I hadn't heard for like years, or you know, months or whatever, it's been a long time, right? You get the point. Comes on, you're like, fuck yes. So I want to play that song right now. And it's, I don't know, I've been kind of in a classic rock mood here recently. Even over, you know, the pop punk stuff that, you know, people give me shit about. I've actually been listening to more metal and classic rock and hard rock and stuff like that. So this came on, and fucking love it. Ramble on. Led Zeppelin.
Now the time is now.
So I don't know if you experienced that, but were you just, I don't know, you're just feeling that song when you hadn't heard it for a while. It's got to be mood, atmosphere, the whole nine yards, you know what I mean? But I dig that, man. I like when a song comes back that's like, you know, I've heard, and then maybe it's, you know, 20, 30 years old, but you hear it and you're like, fucking A, dude, that's the stuff right there. It's Zeppelin. It's hard to beat anything Zeppelin did, you know. Of course, they didn't have, I don't love every song, but there's a lot I do love in their catalog for sure. And, you know, everybody has these debates about Beatles, Stones, Zeppelin, you know, who's the best or whatever. I don't know if you need to really even justify it, that who's best. It's just like, hey, I like this music. They have a catalog that I prefer more, this band, whoever it may be. There's more songs by that band that I like than I like from this other band. So I guess at that point you say, okay, that's my favorite, right? Or so, I don't know. Between those three bands, it's really hard for me. I usually say, you know, Stones over Beatles. But getting to Zeppelin territory, that's tough, man. It's really tough. And I do love the Beatles, don't get me wrong. But actually, I had one more magical moment today, before we get to the beer of the show, where I was in the grocery store. And fucking 30 Heat Special comes on, and I'm fucking singing it in the grocery store. So let's play some 38 Special. I don't know if I've played them ever. So let's do it. Thirsty. This beer is brought to you. I actually did this segment in Italy, Pescara, Italy, with my buddy Ivan. So Ivan's going to tell you a little bit about the beer, but Mr. G's going to roll us into this thing. Let's do it. I'm here back in Pescara with my buddy Ivan. He's about to pour me a beer. What am I drinking, Ivan?
It's a white IPA. It's made with the wheat, but it's still an IPA, so very hoppy. And it has lemon zest in it, so it's citrusy because of the lemon zest.
Oh, sweet. Dude, and he pours beer like nobody's business. He just like basically just throws it in the glass. Well, not this one. Actually, your boss did that yesterday.
That, what was that one yesterday? I don't remember the beer yesterday that poured.
Well, no, Alex poured it, and he just basically put the smoothie in the thing.
Yeah, but we do it because we want to get rid of the carbonation, as I said last podcast with you.
Yeah.
We want to get rid of the carbonation in excess, so that is why.
Ivan, real quick, play a song.
Sir Duke by, what's the name of the guy? Sir Duke by, I don't remember the name of the great, Stevie Wonder.
There you go.
Opportunity for all to sing, dance, and clap their hands.
All right, guys. I'm going to stop yapping. I've got a great interview for you. It's a good long one with Simone. Such a great guy. And such a great musician, writer, everything. The guy and him and DGM are just fucking amazing. So I'm going to send you off to the interview with Simone. Before I do, I want to give you one big pause.
Hey, everyone. This is Simone Muloroni from DGM. And you're listening to The Ragman Show. Horns up.
You're on live with Ragman. With I can call this guy a friend. He's been on the show, I don't know, 3 or 4 times now. And he's definitely one of my favorite guitar players out there today. The guy's just an amazing guitar player as well as a songwriter. And his band, DGM, is one of my favorite bands out there. When they have a brand new record out, I get really excited, like a little schoolgirl, like back when I was in high school, and I want to rush out to get it. So, Simone, welcome back, man. Welcome to the Ragman Show.
Thanks for having me, my friend. It's a pleasure. What a nice introduction. I don't feel worthy about all these kind words.
Dude, you're freaking awesome. You know, every time we talk, I praise how awesome of a musician you are. And
I really appreciate it.
Producer, you do a lot, dude. You're always busy, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we jump into the new record, I want to just jump back to Tragic Separation, which was an amazing record. I love that record. And we chatted then. I think it's the last time we chatted. And yeah. I was just curious, as far as support for Tragic Separation, did you guys get to tour much, or did you play many dates? How did you support that record?
Actually, it was probably the worst album ever, you know, in my career at least, about support wise because, you know, it was released right in the middle of the first lockdown in COVID, or second, I don't remember. That year, you know, the infamous year. And so we were in the beginning, I probably we talk about that, but we asked the label, oh, please, can you wait a little bit to see if things are better so we can just tour and do the usual stuff, you know. And then we waited a little bit, but you know, when a band delivers an album to the label, it's already been done since forever. So I hate to have the album in the hard drive and waiting for years, months. So we just put it out, hoping that people enjoyed it. And I mean, the reaction of the fans, I think, was amazing. I mean, everybody's always telling me, "Oh, it's a great album," but to be completely honest, the sales weren't that good compared to the previous one. And, you know, you can blame, I don't know, the COVID. And we actually played one gig only.
Oh, wow.
That's because in Italy, things were pretty bad. And I remember the only show we played was late in the summer of the second year after the first lockdown. And we were in Switzerland. And I remember, you know, I'm from San Marino, a different country, not exactly Italy, so we have different rules, different stuff. And I did a different vaccine you know, for COVID. It wasn't the usual, like, Pfizer, you know, the usual two, three names. I did the Russian one. I don't know if it did anything or I don't know. But just,
that was the, that water was, injected in your veins.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That was the one that the my country had, you know, so I had to do that. And but that wasn't recognized in most of the countries in Europe. So I remember clearly when we did that show, it was a nightmare because the promoter, as soon as I arrived, he asked us for, you know, I don't know the name, the vaccine card, whatever. Uh-huh. And I presented mine and he was like, oh, you cannot play because you're not allowed even in the hotel and whatever. And we drove like 20 hours to get there. And I was so frustrated.
Oh, I bet.
And then they sent me in a pharmacy to do the test and I was negative. So, oh, maybe this will be fine for one night, but then you have to leave. You know, all this crazy bullshit around the thing. And then we played that show. And then another lockdown came in Italy. So we basically didn't have the chance to go out at all, you know. So, yeah, of course, we did all we could do from home. I did a bunch of, you know, like video recording all my solos, you know, everything you could do from home, you know, like play through whatever. But it's not as good as going out and spread the word with music and playing music, you know. So that's probably a combination of factors that led to the album not selling as the previous. But to me, it's a pity because I think that one is probably our best album ever. So it's like, you know, it's always a shame for me as a songwriter when you put all that effort and you don't receive the same amount of feedbacks back, you know. It's not about selling thousands of more records more. We're not a band that sells like Metallica, of course, not even close. I mean, not even close to even the medium bands. But, you know, it's always personal. You know, you feel like you failed if the album at least doesn't sell as the previous one, you know. But again, it's a combination of factors probably. So.
Well, yeah, that's what it sounds like. And that's a shame because I really, really enjoyed that record and thought, wow. I actually started traveling for work and getting to come to Europe. So I was trying to plan a trip where I could secretly go see DGM, but there were no dates. So I was kind of curious what had happened. So that's good to know. It's such a shame. But I guess the good news is, you know, things are better. And COVID's kind of a thing of the past. I know it is in the U.S., and I believe in Europe, too. I mean, I don't get stuck any of that anymore.
No, nothing. Actually, nothing is happening. I mean, it's probably out there. I don't really know, but it's not stopping bands or anyone to do live promotion on anyone. So it would be different, probably.
Yeah. I love being able to be on a plane now and be able to cough and not freak out that everybody thinks I'm about to kill them with my germs.
Exactly.
So I tell you what, so let's jump into the brand new record, Life, that comes out on November 17th on Frontiers. Let me ask you this. So there was a touring, so I'm assuming you probably started writing during the lockdown. And what was the thought going into Life after Tragic Separation? What kind of what your thoughts were like as far as writing? Was there a certain plan or did you just come up with stuff and it is what it is?
I think the second. I mean, the thing that probably nobody knows, I mean, I'm starting to tell this thing now that I'm doing interviews. The thing is that since I had a lot of free time, because, yeah, I was working, I have my home studio from my studio at home, so I was continually mixing and doing stuff for bands. But, of course, you had a lot of free time that you had in the past, during the lockdown, I mean. And I started writing stuff and riffs after riff. And the thing is that I basically wrote two albums. You know, one is Life. And the other one is not an album that originally I wasn't even sure it was a DGM album because it was quite different, you know, like more prog rockish, like I don't want to say old school, but you know, like with mellotrons, no double bass, guitars weren't that heavy, like more crunch, and of course a lot of solos and a lot of stuff. And but the thing, a lot of acoustics, because 3 years ago I bought my first acoustic guitar, and it's crazy. Everybody, when I tell this story, everybody, why didn't you have an acoustic guitar? And I was like, I don't know. I just play.
Everybody
play
learns on the acoustic alone. Where were you?
And actually, I bought this beautiful Martin guitar, and I started playing a lot of that instead of the electric guitar. And I came up with a lot of different songs, you know. And in the beginning, I thought, okay, I'll keep these songs for maybe another project. And when I have some electric, like heavy ideas, I'll keep those for DGM. So I was saying, I started writing all this diverse stuff. And one day I was like playing the stuff for my bass player, you know, Andrea, of DGM. And he was so amazed, like, oh man, this new stuff is great. Why don't we do another DGM album but with different style? So our first idea was to release a double record, you know, like one side being live, the heavy one, and the other one being the, I don't want to say mellow, because it's just a little bit different, you know, a little bit different sounding from our previous stuff. And that was our idea. And we started basically working on both albums at the same time. And we actually recorded both of them. And I basically mixed the second one too. But then, you know, when we talked to the label, they were saying, oh, maybe this too much stuff, you know, because it was like 1 hour of an album and 1 hour the other one. So maybe it's too much information for people to digest, you know, two albums like that at the same time. Why don't we put out like in different times, you know? So we agreed, and we also agreed that the first one has to be live simply because it's in the same vein of the previous albums, you know, like Tragic Separation. I never planned to, okay, let me do an album that is exactly like the previous one. I just write whatever it comes. And most of the time when I write heavy stuff, it happens to be pretty much in that ballpark, you know. Yeah, you can find some different elements here and there, but pretty much that's my style when I write, when it comes to heavy prog or whatever you want to call it. But then, yeah, that's why I really started to listening to different bands that I never listened before. I fell in love with Steven Wilson, all the Porcupine Tree stuff, and now I'm a super fan of this stuff, and I really would love to explore that side of progressive music more, rather than trying to do another 200 BPM song with fast shredding stuff once again. You know, I'm starting to feeling it's not old. It's just the taste changes. You know.
Yeah.
So it's like I just don't feel the excitement anymore in playing super fast stuff for 60 minutes, trying to impress people about my guitar playing. I mean, I'm not studying technique and on guitar since forever. So I'm probably getting worse at playing guitar, but technique-wise. But you know, I think I'm getting better at like the feeling and the choice of notes and the structure of the solos and talking about the guitar playing. And so that's it. You know, so the lockdown to us brought like so many songs that we couldn't fit, and for us it was stupid to release an album with just, you know, like one heavy song like Symphony X, and the other one was like, I don't know, like Neil Moore's prog rockish style thing. You know, it's like so diverse that we thought, okay, why don't we do two different albums? You know.
Well, I think that's a good idea, and I think, with the label pushing back and saying, guys, this is a bit too much. If you think about the music generation today, and it's so much Spotify, and it's a single here, single there.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that you guys definitely made the right choice. And I got to tell you, I'm pretty excited to hear the more proggy stuff. It just sounds like you're growing as a musician, and you're keeping your ideas fresh and wanting to expand on your playing, which gets me super excited, because again, I'm a big fan of your songwriting as well as your playing, so I can't wait to hear that, man. It's gonna be awesome, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks, man. We're so, it's not that we're not excited about life, about the new album, of course. But, you know, since that one is more, for us, it's older than the new stuff. You know, we're so excited about the new stuff that we cannot wait to put out the second album too, you know. And also, but honestly, there's also that stuff of, that thing of probably my inner, you know, like, I don't know, like ego saying, you know, I'm always afraid that, oh, maybe people will hate what we'll do if we go somewhere different, you know, because I know that I have a certain fan base. It's not that super big, but I know that we have a certain fan base in that style. But what if we go somewhere else? I don't know if you remember Opeth, when they changed direction, it was like a massive, oh, they betrayed us. They betrayed all the fans because they changed style completely. I mean, I'm not saying I'm doing the same change, but yeah, I mean, you're always afraid of the risk. But what's the point on doing a record after record if I'm not completely happy with the style? You know, it's just yeah, you make some money from it and that's it. But that's not the thing that I want to do with music. I just want to do whatever I enjoy playing and composing, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be the haters out there that they want the same record over and over and over again. You're not AC/DC, you're not Motorhead, you can't, that's not you, that's not your band. But I think in the genre you're in, you'll probably get a little bit more forgiveness. But I think as long as the music's strong and well-written, yeah, you'll have the guys that's like, ah, come on, I want another Tragic Separation. Give me that every time. Just like Images and Words with Dream Theater, when they moved on, it's like a lot of fans like, oh, you betrayed me, like you said, you know. Or when Kiss came out with The Elder back in the 80s, and it was like, wow, can they come back from this? And they came back with probably one of their best records in their career, Creatures of the Night. So I think experimentation's really good, and I, as a fan of DGM, I want to hear it. And I'm open, and as long as the songs are well written, that's what I care about.
Yeah, man, it's just a matter of experimenting and going a little bit out. I'm not saying I'm gonna play experimental jazz fusion. I mean, I'm not able to do that. But you know, it's just, okay, why don't we just step away from the usual, okay, main heavy riff, and then melodic verse, and then chorus, and then the usual solo duo with keyboards. You know, it's a formula that worked. And I love it. I mean, and I love every song we did. But, you know, I just felt after I finished Life, the first album, I thought, okay, I don't feel I have any more of these riffs in me. And now it will start to sound a copy of a copy, you know, right. If you know what I mean. So why don't we just do something completely different? So maybe, okay, let's start a song with an acoustic and then... and I also fell in love with all the old, you know, during the lockdown, I became a vinyl freak, like collector. So I was searching all the rare edition of, you know, like King Crimson stuff, you know, all the old classic stuff. And I discovered a lot of stuff that I never listened, you know, so I never heard. So, oh, this sound is great. What it is? And then you discover it's a mellotron, and you start to searching that sound and building a new song over that sound. So I think the future of the band or whatever project that I will do will be more in that direction of prog music, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the next album that will be out will be exactly the bridge, because it's not totally like 70s prog, you know? It's like it has some hard rock songs, it has some like all the style that we love, but more diverse, you know, like we have a suite of 15 minutes that we never had, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, I can't wait to hear it. But hey, we're talking about Life, and
yeah, right now I'm promoting the next album.
Hey, that's cool, man. No, you're giving us all, you're wetting our lips for the next one for sure. Well, I got to say, from what I've heard from Life, I really like it. I think it's definitely a step forward from Tragic Separation. It's not, it seems heavier and I got more of a proggy vibe out of it. And I think a little bit of some of that more classic 70s rock with some of the soloing you're doing on there with Manuel is he's kind of has that more classic 70s keyboard in some of the solos. And I can already see some of that intertwining, even though, I mean, you said you'd already pretty much had life done, but I can already see kind of a step of things changing a little bit. And I like it. I think it's very cool.
Yeah, I think, yeah, as I said, it was when we started live. I mean, I composed, I think, all of the songs. I mean, the music at least. And I was starting to feel, as I said, like, okay, I have this riff. Oh, but this is similar to whatever, Tragic Separation, Flesh and Blood, all the other songs. So I started to throw away a lot of riffs, and it was hard for me to find 10 songs that were, I mean, not hard, because I always write a lot of stuff, you know, but I'm super critic about myself. And I see that the more that I get old, the more to me it's hard to please myself, you know. I always tell to the guys, oh, when I send you a riff, I probably deleted 50 other riffs.
Oh, wow.
You know, because, and they always complaining, oh, maybe those other 49 were great. You know, send us two. No. Because I can really, that's probably the only thing that I am not humble about. I really can tell if a thing is not working from the beginning, you know. So if I have an idea and I start working on that, after 5 minutes, I really have this feeling that, no, it's not working. Yeah, of course, I can make it sound interesting, you know, with the production, with the cool guitar sound, but it's not that. I mean, it has to be great from the source, you know, like the basic idea. And yeah, what you're saying is probably the first clues of the direction we're taking with the band, you know, like, okay, let's write something different, but not, I don't want to say the songs are different from Tragic Separation, because the structure and the formula is probably pretty much the same style, but some hints, like some sounds are starting to sound to be a little bit different. And as you said about my soloing, or Emanuele soloing, we're really tired of the, yeah, we're tired of the battle, you know, like, okay, we're going to be the fastest duo soloing in the world, you know. There's already Johansson and Yngwie taking care of that stuff. And it's, and as much as I love them, it's like, we're just tired of that, you know. I really think the soloing on that on live is probably my best ever, in my opinion, because it's so melodic. And I really spent, I don't want to say, I don't even know how much, but hundreds of hours, like playing over and over the stuff just to find the best part. Because yeah, I'm starting to feeling every solo like a song within a song, and not just, okay, let me put some licks, some shredding arpeggios from hell, whatever, you know, like to impress people. It's not, I don't really care about that. So if you're saying that you're hearing some different elements, and I'm glad to hear.
Yeah, man. Well, I tell you what, let's jump into the first single, Unravel the Sorrow. I love the way you guys do videos. It's like you see the beginning of that, you're wondering if it's going to be a horror movie or what's going to happen in that mansion. But DGM's definitely going to go in and take over. And you guys are all dressed up like you're going to like a nice dinner or something. And then you go in there and wreck the place with your music. But tell me a little bit about that song. I really dig the song. It's very cool. Tell me how it kind of came together.
will remain. Judging yourself, it's not the answer. Don't you see?
I mean, you know what? That song, to me, it's my favorite from the album. That's why I personally choose to have that as a first single. Even everybody, even the label, was saying, oh no, it's too long. You know, all the algorithm of YouTube and whatever, it won't go viral because it's too long. You know, you gotta have the chorus in the first minute and whatever. And I really told them, I don't care, like, at all, because to me, that's my favorite song, and it really represents the heavy side of DGM, because it has a heavy riff, but a super melodic chorus, like catchy, and a melodic solo, and the cool proggy intro. And to me, it was perfect. And I told them, I told everybody, if people is not passionate enough to listen and to wait 1 minute more because there's the intro, it means that they're not worthy of our music, you know what I mean? I don't know if it makes sense in English. I mean, why should I be worried about the result of my music in the commercial sense when it's not my market, you know? I want my fans to be like interested and even if we do something different, as you said, I think everybody told me, oh, you got to cut the intro. But to me, the intro was so cool. Like, it reminded me, I don't know, like 80s movie, whatever, you know, with that synth sound and stuff. And even the video, as you said, you know, we wanted to step away from the, okay, let's dress in black and play in an abandoned factory, whatever, you know, like the cliche of the power metal band. You know, we're just like that in real life. You know, I cut my hair after Tragic Separation, and I don't want to go down with a wig or whatever just to pretend I'm a heavy metal kid, whatever. You know, I'm just a guy that likes music. So sometimes it's heavy, sometimes it's prog, sometimes it's like mellow acoustic stuff. So why should we pretend to be like the leather jackets and with Judas Priest patch, you know, on it? We're not like that. So let's present ourselves actually. Yeah, the image that we wanted to give was a more classy approach, you know, classy in terms of, I don't want to say, I don't know the exact word in English, like refined, not intellectual, you know, but more. We really care about every aspect of the music, so it has to be classy in both in terms of sound, production, and songwriting, and not just, okay, let's throw some double bass here for 60 minutes and have fun over it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I forgot to mention, but I love the intro, like you were saying, with the keyboard and stuff, and then it's like, it starts out like classic, you know, DGM, and then the music stops, you just do that little kind of nasty little, like a raw riff, and then it kicks back in. Yeah, I really dig that. That was the first part of like, wow, this is a little bit different. I really dig where they're going with this.
Yeah, and you know, we got a lot of people saying, I mean, the overall reaction was so good, but you know, there's always haters saying, oh, it's not heavy enough. It's not like that enough. And I mean, we never played brutal music or like Cannibal Corpse. I mean, we're not brutal heavy, you know. We have some, from time to time, we have like heavy riffs, but we always played melodic stuff, you know. To us, we always say that. To us, the vocal lines and the melodies are the most important thing ever. So, yeah, I think Unravel the Sorrow was the first song that I wrote on the album. And I really stand on that, like being the first song and the first single to be out, because to me it was the like the manifest of DGM in that period when I wrote it.
Well, I have a stupid question to ask you. So you cut your hair. I'm just kind of curious. Right. You were just tired of the long hair, and I guess set part two, do you feel a little bit different when you're up there kind of rocking out and you don't have the hair swinging around anymore?
Absolutely. It's not a stupid question, because I actually, you want to know the truth? I cut my hair exactly the day after we shot the video for Flesh and Blood. Because we shot that video in this place. It was a concrete wall, like I don't know, 200 meters high.
And it was, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was summer, and it was like, I don't know, like 45 degrees. And I was dressed all black with long hair, and I was struggling, you know, to breathe. You know, it was like so hot. Mm-hmm. And then I saw my picture with all this hair, you know, like. And I saw like, okay, it's done. I'm tired. And I never thought about that before. You know, to me, I was having long hair since forever, since I was a kid. And the day after, I woke up and I was like, okay, it's done. You know, it's an era that has to be finished. And then, actually, the first time we shooted the video was Unravel the Sorrow with the new cut haircut. Uh-huh. And in the beginning, I felt a little bit stupid because, you know, you're used to since like 25 years to do all the head banging stuff with a hair, and now I'm like, okay, I'm head banging for what? So I had to reinvent reinvent a way to not looking stupid. And you know, but the director, the guy, is really great guy, and he has a great eye, you know, like for movement and stuff. So he really directed me, okay, don't do that, do that rather than this. And yeah, again, it's not I hope it's not stupid, you know, it's not retarded, like, okay, I'm a metalhead but without a hair, so it's like, you're like stupid.
Hey, I'm one of those. Well, another song I want to bring up, I really like this one. This one kind of stuck out to me. It's called Find Your Way. And I love that it's got the big chorus. It's real melodic. But to me, I don't know. I've listened to it like 4 or 5 times, and I get a little bit of a nod to Eddie Van Halen, kind of with the riff during the verses. I don't know if you were going for that or not, but for some reason, my ears are saying kind of reminds me a little bit of like a Van Halen's fun party song.
I mean, that kind of song, I think it's a continuation of, you know, we started with The Passage 2 albums ago with the song Animal.
Yeah, Animal is awesome.
And that was the first attempt of doing, okay, we play prog, but we also like the, you know, the Van Halen kind of straightforward rock style. So why don't we try to mix those styles? And that was the first attempt. And then we tried again with Surrender, the second Tragic Separation single, and then of course Find Your Way was the quest of, okay, I wanna write the final hard rock prog song, you know.
Yeah.
So that was another try, but you know, I think it turned out a little bit different because the chorus remind me actually more of Foo Fighters rather than Van Halen, and then the guitar work is more Van Halen. Every time I try to play that style, it's hard to go out from that path, you know, because Eddie was like perfect in playing those those songs. So it's really hard to find something different and not trying to mimic his licks and whatever. So it's all good.
Well, I also want to mention the instrumental, Eve, which I got to go back and. I'm an older guy, so my memory's not always great, but I was trying to think, have you guys ever done an instrumental? And I'm thinking the last time I talked to you, I asked you if you ever thought about doing like just a solo Simone Mulroney instrumental record. And you're like, no, I don't think I'd want to do that. But you have this instrumental. Is this the first time DGM's done this? And then I guess the second part is, What was the motivation? Were you just like, I can't see where there's lyrics in this, or kind of what your thoughts are behind that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I still think the same, that I won't ever put out like a solo record per se, you know, like the Shredders kind of records. But you know, that song came out easily when I bought a new Marshall head. You know, in the studio I'm constantly changing gear, you know, oh, I found this Marshall from the 80s, let's try this. And I sell and buy things over and over every month. So I bought this new, it was from 85, like JCM 800 old Marshall head.
Oh wow.
And you know, when you test the thing, you just improvise, or you play like the Van Halen riffs, or you improvise something. And I came up with this line that to me was really Steve Vai-ish, you know, Steve Vai from the Alien Love Secret era, you know, kind of thing. And then, you know, it was basically the whole thing in 5 minutes, you know, like it's not that complicated. There's like three different riffs and modulates in a solo section that came later. And I never thought, okay, this is a DGM thing. Never. It stayed in my hard drive forever, like for 2-3 years. And then, you know, I have those days when I feel uninspired and I just start to go back to the folder. You know, I probably have like 300 ideas in the folders, you know, that I never go back, you know. And sometimes I just start to listen back and I was mesmerized because that riff, I loved it. And I sent to the guys and I told them, why don't we do a song around this riff? And they said, oh, but it's working like that, like an instrumental. Why not? It's actually the first time we did that. We do an instrumental, but it's not like, to my ears at least, it's not like a guitar solo extravaganza, you know. It has a guitar solo, but it's a little part, you know. The main thing is it's like this big open riff, you know, Steve Vai, a little bit Devin Townsend sometimes. Those were the names that came to me, and I felt that it gave to the record a sort of like a moment of breath in between like the heaviness and the amount of notes that we were putting one after the other. So we said, why not? You know, it's just something different.
Well, I really dig it, man. And I think the whole record as a whole flows very well. And I was laughing to myself when you were just talking. I was like, well, shit, that's Mark's break. I gotta say, that guy is singing his ass off on this record. He sounds so, I mean, everybody sounds great, but it just seems like Mark gets better record by record by record.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that, because you know, as a musician, especially singers, when they're getting old, they're always afraid, oh, am I going to nail this one like the previous one? Because it's not like playing guitar, you know?
Yeah.
You have the physical limitations of, you know, your vocal cords like are getting old and you cannot reach the high notes. But I think this one worked so smooth recording-wise that it was so easy, because he was nailing every song like 2-3 takes and it's done. It's not like struggling to get the perfect take. It was super in shape. And one different thing that happened, because Mark had his like family issues at home and he couldn't leave his hometown for like 1 year, okay? Mm-hmm. Because he had some health issues with his family and whatever. So we decided to do something that we never did before. So we recorded vocals like streaming, with a streaming platform. So I was in my studio, and there are these new softwares that allows you to record someone else in a different studio, but you can see and hear the audio in real time with studio quality, you know? So I just ship in my microphone, all my setup for recording vocals. And the great thing about that is that you're not forced to record all vocals in 3 days, you know, like we usually did. It's more like, okay, he was calling me, okay, today I'm feeling great, let's do one song. So we were like connecting and we were recording one song, like 2-3 hours, whatever. And then it was like, okay, you want to do another one? Yeah, why not? Or maybe, no, today I'm feeling tired. Let's try tomorrow. So it was a super painless process rather than, okay, we have 3 days. We have to squeeze everything in it. And if something is wrong, we cannot fix it because he's living like 8 hours drive from me. So it's not that if something is wrong, you can just open the session and record it again. You got to nail it in those 3 days, you know? So it was always stressful for me, at least as a producer. But now we discovered this process. I don't know if it will be the standard, but it's great because also you have the camera. So you just seeing each other like if you were in the same room, it's the same thing.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. I mean, did you and the other guys, did you all get in a room and record, or I guess, how did you record the rest of the guys in the band? Was it, they all came down to the studio and recorded with the exception of Mark?
Yeah. The rest of the recording process was like the usual. They come one by one in my studio. So first Fabio with drums and then Andrea with bass. Then I put down my guitars and then we do keyboards with Emanuele. You know, we're always doing things in the same place, in the same room together. You know, only vocals we did the different. And I gotta tell you, I was super skeptical because, you know, I was afraid to missing the human relationship part, you know, like talking to the guy in the same room. Hey, you gotta try this, you gotta try that. But it really went smooth. And probably album after album, we know each other so well that he knows what I like. You know, in the beginning, we were fighting way more. Like, he wanted to, oh, I want to do this. And I hated that. So there were a lot of, like, trial and error, okay, or fights about that. But now we're always on the same page, you know. He knows that, okay, Simone likes when I sing like this. So it goes like that directly, you know.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And it's cool you were able to do it remotely. And the production, the record sounds amazing, man. It really does.
Oh, thank you.
I guess we'll talk about this last song, To the Core. I could talk about every one, believe me. But that's the latest single. I like the video for that as well. It's almost like you're on a rotating stage, but I think it's just a panoramic camera going around.
Exactly.
But it's just a really good, heavy, upbeat song. You start with that little ripping in the beginning. And I really like the solo that you do with Emmanuel in the middle. That's kind of a nice, long, extended solo. I thought that was really well. And, of course, the chorus, everything else is awesome. Can you kind of tell me how that song came together?
I mean, that song was I don't want to say the easiest, because it's, as I was saying, it's really in the vein of the old, old stuff, you know, like Flesh and Blood, you know, those songs, where I think it came later in the process, because I was feeling that we were missing some upbeat, like really, I don't want to say power metal, but more like fast stuff, you know. And I think it happened. It's of course the influence of Symphony X and Romeo are like evident, you know, because he's the master on those kind of songs. And I think it came after, probably right after I was listening back to the albums that I did with Romeo that I mixed, and I got inspired to do that style of riffing. But, you know, trying to modulate it into my own style, not trying to copy, of course, the exact riffs or not choices. And I think the chorus came from Emanuele, the keyboard player, because, you know, that's a pity. He's a great, I always tell him, he's a great composer and great musician, but he's too lazy, you know? He never comes up with, oh, I got an idea for a song, you know? It's always, you gotta always ask him, hey, please, do you have something? But, you know, it's great when I have ideas and I'm stuck. It's always like that. When I'm stuck, you know, I don't know. Let's say I wrote the riff and the main verse and I don't know how to go on. It's always have brilliant ideas. Why don't we do that? Oh, that's great. Maybe it's just a spark, you know, and that ignites me to go on with something else. And yeah, about the solos, again, it's just the research of not doing the speedy technical thing, but trying to do something more melodic and more memorable, rather than, okay, I have a fast song, I gotta do tapping at you know, like 200 BPM for 1 minute, you know, trying to find something different and interesting for me, at least, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and yeah, and yeah, of course. I think it's probably my favorite chorus on the record, so it had to be the second single.
Yeah, the chorus is solid, and I was going to just mention again something you had mentioned a little bit ago, was playing with more feeling, and
yeah,
that's what
yeah.
I love about your playing. You can hit that one note and hold it, and dude, I like that better than you playing 100 notes a minute. I mean, just, I mean, that's the stuff that gets the hair on the, you standing up on my arm, when I hear that, I'm like, oh my God, that's just so awesome. And I think that's the key to a great guitar player. If they can play one note and have that effect on someone, opposed to someone like eBay playing 100,000 notes, right?
That's the point. I mean, I grew up with loving Yngwie and Romeo and all Symphony X. But, you know, I realize now that I was more fan of the songwriting. I love the songs rather than the specific solo, you know? I don't know if it makes sense.
Oh, yeah,
when you totally. When you listen to Steve Lukather or Neil Sean solos, that's when I have the goosebumps, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the moments. It's like, and I started to realize that I was going towards that direction. I mean, I'm not that melodic. I'm in the middle. I still like to put some, you know, some short bursts of like flashy notes. But I think it's at the service of the song, you know? It's not always like that. So, again, trying to write a song within a song, you know? If you have a great solo, then nobody nowadays care anymore about solos, but I care.
Yeah.
And I think it's a plus to the song, right?
Definitely, man. Definitely. Well, I guess I have my last question for you regarding the record. What was the most challenging song on the record for you to get through? I have a guess, but I don't know if I'm right. And just because it's a little bit different from the flow of the record, and it ends the record, my guess would be Neuro Romancer.
You mean Neuromancer. Yeah, you mean the most difficult to record? Or
Just to write and for the whole thing to come together.
I think that one, you're right. Probably that one or the song before. Yeah, because those probably will be out. We really never wrote that much of like triplet kind of song, you know, like because, you know, my drummer hates those songs, you know, because he hates to play that groove, that kind of groove. It's more like a 4-4, like tum-tum-tum, or, you know, that kind of style. So, but I really felt the need of, okay, we gotta do something different, you know, rather than repeat the same grooves over and over. And yeah, I gotta say, I'm not an expert on those kind of rhythms, you know? So to me, it was more the struggle on that one. I think Neuromancer, I don't even know the right pronunciation. It's like William Gibson book. I just copied from that. I think that song came easy because I really wanted like a more anthemic song, you know, that was more about the space and the atmosphere rather than the heavy licks and whatever. And I think the singing of Mark in that came really so easy and soulful that I gotta say that Leave All Behind was the most difficult song to realize and finish.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Now, I like how Neuromancer like ends the record. It's kind of slow and heavy. Kind of reminds me a little bit of like what Stradivarius used to do a long time ago with some of their more epic songs.
Right.
And I like that. You guys don't do a lot of that, and I really enjoyed that because it's a little different, right? So it's very cool. Yeah. Well, Simone, I want to congratulate you on a great new record, man. Before I let you go, tell me, what's the plan for touring? Before we leave the record, one more last thing. I just want to mention, I saw on your Instagram, I saw you do like an unboxing of the new record, but you also have a special for the LP where you're sending out like a signed postcard as well as a guitar pick for the double record, which is pretty solid, man.
Yeah, man, we try, you know, it's always to try to give the fans something different, you know, because especially now that I'm a vinyl freak, I was really caring about having something different for the fans, not just the regular, okay, you just buy the vinyl and that's it. So we really try to incorporate something. I mean, it's not much, of course, but, you know, I always love when bands put out something special, like special editions, and with something different. And people kept asking me for DGM picks since forever, like 20 years. Oh, do you have a pick? And I never did like the custom DGM picks, and now I did it. So hopefully we'll run out of those soon.
Nice. Well, you know, what's funny is, you know, I'm still old school enough to like, man, I want a Simone Mulleroney guitar pick. And it'd be cool to have the signed postcard by the band. That would be pretty awesome. So, no, I thought that was really cool that you guys were offering that. So, I guess, so lastly, touring, what are the plans? Are you still making a plan? I'm assuming it's going to be 2024. I don't know if you do any shows this year, unless I saw you had a record release party here, I guess, coming up in a little over a week. But
yeah, but
I don't even know if you play live there, do you?
No, it's like we'll play probably 5-6 songs in acoustic, you know, because the place is just a pub, you know. Mm-hmm. So there will be some journalists and it's like it's more a party to see the guys in the band and some friends, you know, just to celebrate the release. And just to justify the entering ticket, we will play some, and like five, six songs in acoustic from the new album. And I gotta tell you, we're starting to arrange those songs in acoustic, and we're enjoying so much that I told the guys, oh, why don't we do like an acoustic tour also, you know, like something different. But speaking about the real tour, we're definitely going to play in next year, 2024, mainly because we're not playing together as a band since 2 years. So I told the guys, okay, because before we take all the new gigs and stuff, I really want to go in the same room and start to practice again, like to build the chemistry and see what happens, you know, because 2 years of just recording and playing guitar in my chair and not standing up, you know, it's a different thing, you know. So you gotta get used to it again. It's not like 5-6 years ago we were playing every weekend, every month. So we just want to build the chemistry of the band again, and then we'll do shows in next year. But again, my plan is to put out the other album as soon as possible. So because we will really love to play that album, which also is a concept as a whole. You know, that is my dream. You know, so we'll see what happens with label and stuff like that. So there's always the other people involved. So it's not our choice only.
Yeah, I got you, man. I got you. Well, Simone, before we let you go, is there anything you want to tell the fans out there?
Oh, just thanks to everyone for the support, and please just keep in whatever way, like listen to our songs on Spotify or buy their vinyls, the special edition vinyl directly from the band or whatever. We just need people to enjoy our music and to get us feedback about that. That's what pushes us to do more. Thanks for having me on the show once again.
Well, I was going to thank you. So, Simone, thank you for coming on the Ragman Show. I really appreciate it. We want to tell all the fans to grab DGM's Life out on Frontiers on November 17th. Simone, yep. This was awesome talking to you, brother.
Likewise, man.